This is F1 Debrief. I'm still on top of the moon. Coming up this week, we catch up with team and driver movements, visit the Fantasy Races League, and get lots of feedback about the race. Japan was quite a chaotic weekend, wasn't it?
It messed up our body clocks just a little bit.
Yeah. Then we thought we'd do a mini-series to cover us moving house.
Perfect.
Because moving house mid-season is clever.
And what a great mini-series that was.
Well, thank you. Then, this weekend, we thought, well, Brazil will be fine. It's late in the afternoon.
All the time in the world.
It's been manic. Did you see that race?
Did you see that qualifying?
I know.
Oh, we have got so much to talk about. Good
week, bad week. It's been a good week for Nico Rosberg as he found his missing helmet.
Oh, good Lord.
It was all a big marketing stunt. He kept on tweeting about how he'd lost his helmet and couldn't find it anywhere, and people had to help him look and blah, blah, blah. Then he found it.
Yay.
It's been a bad week for David Coulthard, who was invited to demo the Red Bull over a bridge in Mumbai. He was told, though, not to go over 100 kilometres an hour, because that's the bridge speed limit. He went 260 kilometres an hour, which pleased the fans, but organisers didn't get their deposit back because of his speedy delivery. Here, come race over our bridge in your F1 car, but don't go too fast.
Sets a wonderful precedent for when we go racing in that country. Those drivers better watch out for those pit speeding fines.
It's been a good week for journalists as between Suzuka and Brazil, David Coulthard, Bruno Senna and Martin Brundle went to Abu Dhabi and ran some of them round the Yas Marina circuit. Morris Hamilton tweeted about it. He's on Twitter now, you know. He said, 6 laps of Abu Dhabi with Martin Brundle in a 2-seat F1 car and I'm flying home without a plane. Absolutely mega.
How come he got more laps than anybody else?
I don't know, but I want to start using mega. I think we should bring that back. It's been a bad week for Jo Turley, one of the AT&T Williams catering staff. She flew to Brazil via Hawaii, where she swam with sharks for the first time. She said it was amazing to see these sharks. However, her view was ruined at one point when one of the other divers in the cage vomited. It's so gross. I can't believe you made me put that story in. News and views. It seems like quite a long time ago, but that's probably because we haven't done a show for 2 weeks. But Kubica is joining Renault next year.
Confirmed.
Yes.
No teammate confirmation as yet, though.
No.
I want to know who's going to be in the second seat.
Well, it's not going to be Grosjean, that's for sure.
He's not selling himself too well at the moment.
He's
is
a bit
BFF?
Spin happy.
BFF Grosjean. Not so much of a BFF right now.
No. There is talk that it could be Mr. Kovalainen.
I think that would be good, actually. If Kovi came back to Renault, that would be quite fitting. He did very well in the 1 year that he was there, and with Flav out of the picture, I can see him gelling quite well with Kubica.
I don't know if he'd want to go back, though, because Ron Dennis did say he was a broken man when he got to McLaren.
Yeah, that was mostly Flav. If anyone's out there to break drivers, it's going to be Flavio, and now he's off the scene. And I think Kovi might be looking at that seat and thinking, actually, you know, that's not such a bad idea for next year.
In other news, Williams confirmed their split with Toyota, so they are without engine supplier at the moment, or so they're telling us.
And we think they're going to go with Cosworth.
Well, that is the big rumour, but they don't like Cosworth.
No, we know for a fact that Frank said to us, he said to us when we saw him before
Christmas.
We heard
it from the horse's mouth, so
to speak.
He
said they were, well, to paraphrase, the impression I got from him was he thought they were rubbish and he didn't fear them as a competitor engine. So maybe something's changed. Maybe they've improved in some way, shape or form. Or maybe he's got another plan altogether.
Another interesting development in the teams, Otmar Szafnauer has replaced Simon Roberts as Chief Operating Officer of Force India.
What is going down there?
Well,
that's got to be considered unusual.
It is weird. Roberts has gone back to McLaren, which makes sense because that's where he came from.
But not two races before the end of the season. That's McLaren making a statement right there, isn't it?
It is a bit unusual. Szafnauer used to work at Honda before they folded. He also started off at BAR and was a COO at Jaguar.
I think maybe briefly, or I'm not even sure if he even got going at Jaguar. It was certainly a brief tenure if he was there.
But he spent the last year working on the official iPhone app.
Which I love.
Well,
I absolutely love this guy to pieces.
I
can't say his name, although I can do Otmar. Can I just call him Otmar?
Yes, it is good, but how does that qualify him to be a COO?
Hi,
I made an app. Can I have a job, please?
I would say what makes a COO a qualified person to make an iPhone app? The iPhone app is the unusual thing in this relationship, and I desperately, desperately hope that him moving to Force India isn't going to spell the end of what I believe to be a fantastic addition to this year's season. I mean, I wouldn't want to be without it, and I know that it's developed, but I was hoping that he would continue to make bigger and better and build upon on what he started in the iPhone world. But I guess if that's, you know, if what it, what interests him is Force India, maybe he's going to go and do more with them on that front.
It is slightly weird because they are on the up at the moment. Now they're rocking the boat again.
Can we assume that Simon Roberts was part of being on the up and McLaren have recognised this and said, right, this is, you know, we're not having this. This Force India, they've made too much of an improvement and we're not allowing that at all. That wasn't part of the plan. I don't know whether it has any bearing on the Mercedes Braun tie up and whether or not Force India might be losing out to Mercedes on that front. I presume it's unrelated, but there's definitely a key political statement being made by McLaren by doing what they're doing at this point in time.
Stephen Roy says McLaren still have a partnership agreement with Force India next season.
So in that case, then obviously the Mercedes deal isn't going to come to an end anytime soon, because obviously McLaren is still associated with Mercedes. In that case, they just must value Simon that much.
They're just being a bit stingy.
Yes, he's obviously just been too damn good.
I think we mentioned in the last show that Massa was going to get back behind the wheel of an F2007 with GP2 tyres on, and now he's done it. He was on track at Fiorano, and he said he felt completely comfortable as if the accident had never happened, and he also finally admitted that he wouldn't be back for Abu Dhabi. Whether that was related to the driving or not, I don't know.
Now, my cynical self suggested that last time when we discussed this, it was all about PR. And to a certain extent, I still think that is true. However, I am massively disappointed to see that Ferrari have taken out the taken up the F2007 route, as they did with Michael earlier in the year. Now, I know this is a loophole. I completely understand that they are allowed to do this. It's the regulations that allow Ferrari to pick up a car that's now nearly more than 2 years old, stick a bizarre choice of tyres on the car, and go out testing. I just don't think that it's right. I don't think teams should be allowed to do it. Otherwise, I'm sure more teams will be doing exactly the same thing, rolling out their old cars, sticking drivers in them, and sending them around test tracks next year. It's a loophole that needs to be shut this winter. And I don't know why Ferrari feel Massa should be out there doing it now, because he's not coming back for Abu Dhabi. It's not going to happen. So he's got winter testing. Why does he need to make the point of doing it now?
Well, the weird thing is that Williams said they were fine with it, and they have been so anti-everything.
Well, Williams are anti-Schumacher, which is understandable after what he did to Jacques and when he did it. And they hold a grudge, and that's fine. To the point, I can see why Williams have decided, well, actually, it's Massa, and we're going to make a point of saying that's fine, because it's Massa and not Michael. I just don't think that it sets a good standard that they're going to pick and choose what they complain about. And yes, it is within the regulations, so Williams don't really have a case to answer. You know, it's none of their business, and great, they gave their permission, and all is well in the world. I just do not think that it's right.
There's plenty of Massa news. He's been in the headlines quite a lot. His eye has fully healed, tests show, so that's good news. He was back in the paddock in Brazil, which I think must have been quite difficult for him, and he waved the checkered flag at the end of the race.
He did a good job.
He did a very good job.
I've seen worse.
He even showed up
at Brazil
in one of the FIA press conferences,
which was weird.
Mm. But there you go.
People will. I guess there was a call from the press corps to speak to him. They wanted time with Massa, and I guess the FIA relented and said, "Yeah, all right, let's put him in there. He's not driving. He's not even a reserve driver. He's just Brazilian, and it's Brazil. And let's stick him up. Let's give him a microphone and put him up on a pedestal."
Can't hurt, they probably thought, but he has been stirring up a bit of trouble.
Ooh, I'd forgotten about this.
He came out and said that his new teammate for next year, Alonso, perhaps knew about the goings-on during the Singapore Grand Prix last year. He's definitely trying to stir something, isn't he?
I like it. Well, you see, we always assume Massa's the nice guy. He's just a sweet, chubby little chappy, isn't he? He's, you know, him and Rob, what a great partnership. Aren't they lovely? But then, you know, he's sticking the knife in. But he's getting one in before Alonso gets a chance.
Well, Alonso wasn't bothered. He said he thought maybe it had been taken out of context or something. But he did add, "It will not affect anything on me or our relationship. I still think that it will be great because in Ferrari, the group is more important than the individual."
Alonso's making all the right noises. What he's saying there, and what I'm reading into that, is I didn't get the love and support I wanted at Renault. I didn't get the love and support I wanted when I went to McLaren. I want to go somewhere where it's a family and people care for me, because I'm a needy chap. And in that respect, I think Ferrari will love him for it. I think they will adopt him, and the Tifosi will pick up on that. And I think that will work very well for Alonso, and he's saying all the right things. I tell you what, though, I'm really looking forward to a Massa-Alonso lineup for 2010. We have no absolute confirmation that Massa will be driving next year, but we assume he will be. And I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be a tooth and nail battle throughout the whole season.
Well, also, and I don't quite know why, but Barrichello waded into the argument as well. And he says that people might be putting more weight on Massa's words because he's been out of the paddock for a while and only just come back into it. And also because of that, he probably doesn't know what he's talking about. Now I paraphrase, obviously.
I can see why. I mean, he's clearly got issues when it comes to Singapore last year. And he mentioned previously that he wanted to explore all avenues to try and retain his title, which seemed a bit odd at the time and not something we particularly agree with. So in that respect, maybe he's not the same guy that he was before the accident, and maybe he's brought out a more competitive edge.
It does
maybe
happen.
He's had time to think about stuff, and we may see a different Massa in the car. But whatever happens, it's going to be a great showdown.
Ollie says he disagrees. Massa is saying the wrong things completely, but he does agree about the partnership. He wants 2010 to come a lot quicker. Stephen Roy says, I think he's trying to rattle Alonso like Hamilton did. I think his tactics are perfect.
I agree with both of those comments. I can see what Ollie means, and I can see what Stephen means. I think you've got to come out fighting against Alonso, but possibly Massa is running the risk of upsetting Ferrari by saying the things they're saying, because clearly Ferrari want Alonso to be with them. And so he may be rocking that boat a little bit more than he maybe needs to.
There's also a bit of news about our brand new teams for next year. Notus built their wind tunnel model, so that will be going into the wind tunnel shortly. And they confirm that the gearbox will be built by X-Track. Joe Saywood suggests that Trulli might be the most likely Notus driver, but Trulli says he's hanging around waiting for Toyota to sign off their budget.
Well, that's good of him.
Also, John Howitt was doing lots of dodging questions in the paddock during qualifying, and he said they're hoping to get their hands on Kimi, and they've offered him some money, but Kimi was looking for a little bit more.
I don't think they've got any hope in hell of getting Kimi, but bless them for trying.
I like how open and honest they were about that. It's not very often you hear people talking about money.
Good point. But good on Trulli. If he really is hanging on to see what Toyota are up to, and he's going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and he's going to give them time, that's good. I'm slightly concerned, actually, by Notus. Are they not actually planning to put their car on track anytime soon? Are they going to get any track time at all? They've only made a wind tunnel model. Yeah. That's all they've done thus far.
There's no word about track time.
It doesn't sound like it's a particularly difficult thing to do. Presumably it's a scale model, and therefore, how hard can that be to make? You could probably make one of those in a week.
Nick Worth of Manor says their car is on schedule. Their first chassis is being built right now and will be ready in a few weeks. They are planning to run on track at the beginning of February. The FIA went and checked out the USF1 factory in Charlotte, and they said they're progressing well.
Which is good, because there were rumours of the team not achieving anything in the factory, being desolate.
Well, I wasn't sure if the FIA go and visit all the new teams, or it was because of the rumours.
I wonder if they just fancied a trip to the States.
Could be.
Bit of a holiday.
Ken Anderson said, we are proud to show them that despite what is currently circulating in the rumour mill, our Charlotte shop is fully operational and we are well underway to construction of a unique US-designed Formula One race car.
I like the idea of a Charlotte shop.
They
sell Charlottes.
Yeah. Peter Windsor had the best quotes, though. He said that the Concorde Agreement was signed so late that it has been causing them some problems in terms of finding drivers. The quote was, because of all the time we've lost, our ambition to run two young Americans is looking more difficult. I'm still hoping we'll be able to run one American, but that's a tall order because there aren't many Americans out there with super licenses.
Oh dear. So the plan is falling to pieces already.
From running two, we're the great American team. Mm. Then they're like, we might be able to get one, maybe not.
And are they planning anything in terms of bringing some American drivers forward?
Well,
is there any kind of young driver program?
I think they said they are going to be putting money into developing American talent.
Okay, at least they have a plan on that front.
Yeah.
But already the initial dream is beginning to crumble.
I haven't heard much from Campos. They've been quite quiet recently.
Nope. They've been very shouty.
They
have been talking in uppercase. I think Joe got a bit of grief on his comments. I can't remember if we talked about this before, but Campos, he got told off for describing them as Campos and not Campos Meta.
In big capital letters.
That's M-E-T-A in uppercase. And I think is there a one in that name somewhere as well?
Campos Meta is one. A rubbish name.
It's not catchy, but clearly they it's a subject close to their heart, and they feel that it should be represented correctly. So Campos Meta.
At least they know how to comment on blogs, though. That's good. Maybe they'll start commenting on site podcasts.
Oh, but have you seen their own site?
No.
Oh, if ever a site needed a blog. We were discussing it in the comments recently. What they appear to have done, and so I will add the word allegedly into this sentence. They have allegedly taken a load of other teams' Formula One pictures and photoshopped them quite badly and just taken the branding off of it. And the homepage looks like there might be a picture of It might be a Honda picture with the overall sort of scrubbed out and flags painted all over it. It's a bit of a disaster, their homepage, actually. So the fact that they've discovered blog comments, I guess, is it's something to be cheerful about.
In the comments, Lou has said it is a Honda picture, and if anyone should know, it would be Lou. There is some news that emerged late today. Adrian Campos announced the team had secured a tie-up with the Spanish Murcia regional government. The plans include constructing a new racetrack and a manufacturing plant. I don't really know what that means. Are they sharing some budget or something?
They must be putting some money towards the development of some land, presumably because it benefits the local economy or something. That's a very interesting development, because having a racetrack might be quite a bonus, although I guess it's only useful during the winter, unless Campos are expecting some kind of regulation change on that front. That might help them. And we were talking last time, which team was it? Is it Notus, who were building they want to build a factory at Malaysia, and use Sepang as the track right outside their door, which might be helpful, but it might rain a lot. The race. Oh, not the race. Hmm. No quali first. You can't go skipping a qualifying session like that without so much as a word.
Really?
That was crazy.
It was the longest qualifying session ever.
Is it ended yet?
I think it has finished now.
Is it finally over?
Yeah.
Did we get there?
There were so many delays, I can't believe it.
Goodness
stupid
me,
rain.
What a waste of an evening.
I know.
It just went on and on.
Altogether, it took 3 hours to get through what should have been an hour of qualifying.
And it never ended. And the race obviously has a limit, has a defined time, so that the race never overruns. And for some reason, nobody thought of applying that to qualifying.
No.
So there is no 2 hour limit.
Which does make,
just keeps going.
It does make you think that qualifying is more important than the race, because it has its own special rules.
You raise a good point.
And like, the time always stops when there's red flags and stuff, which doesn't apply in other sessions.
That it does seem like an unusual choice, because Saturday is prime time television. It was Saturday evening in the UK, and presumably all over Europe it was prime time television. And Sunday, not so important. Sunday night television isn't really a key selling point for F1. And I just don't think Formula One sold itself very well this weekend. I can imagine a lot of people turning on their televisions all around Europe and watching some puddles and nothing else, nothing going on, no action, nothing exciting, and nothing to sell Formula One.
No, because in the UK, the Strictly Come Dancing fans were upset that their programme was pushed
back.
And
weren't they upset?
They really were.
Points of view are really taking some flack.
Lots of forum posts about that. And I can sort of understand it, because they were pushed back for nothing.
Yes.
Whereas at least I think the race overran a little bit, maybe 15 minutes or so. But that was a championship moment.
That was very important. But as for qualifying, it was just dull, dull, dull. And if I wasn't a Formula One fan and I turned on my Saturday night primetime BBC One television channel and that's what I saw, my Lord, I still wouldn't be.
So some things to note from qualifying when it was actually happening and we weren't waiting for it to happen. Vettel was knocked out quite early, basically ruined his race and his championship there, didn't he?
In a massive sulk.
Yeah.
Of being kicked out so early, didn't he?
He threw his steering wheel out the car and stomped off.
He didn't park in the right place either. Did he park at the earliest possible opportunity? Or was there a rumour that he parked by the FIA stewards' offices and when he complained? But I did see the Red Bull mechanics had to run up the pit lane and go and get his abandoned chassis. He just got out. He kept his helmet on. He was fuming.
Button was also out quite early as well in Q2. So he didn't get it together at all.
No, it seemed like a strange tire choice for Button, and we did wonder if he was crumbling under the pressure, because it looked to us like a straightforward choice. Come in, get some more tires, go out and go faster. And for some reason, he just chose not to do that.
Grosjean had a bit of a crash. Actually, I can't remember if that was qualifying or free practice.
Of a crash. He was competing with Massa for his five Massa spins, and again, didn't do a stellar job and hasn't really sold himself for next year. In any way, shape or form, he's had a decent opportunity in a reasonable car, and thus far he's managed to spin it an awful lot, and his teammate went off at the same point but managed to catch the car, and Romain didn't. He spun it and he binned it and he totaled basically the entire chassis.
Liuzzi also had a big crash as well, and he caused red flags. There were red flags all over the place.
That was a huge, huge crash from Liuzzi. And amazingly, got up and walked away, wasn't in the slightest bit bothered by it, but he managed to wreck his chassis.
Drivers doing well, though. Williams were awesome in the wet. Rosberg was on top for a lot of the sessions.
Almost looked like at one point it was going to be a 1-2.
Yeah.
In qualifying, they were that good.
But as soon as it started drying out, they were less good. They switched to intermediate tyres a bit early, didn't they?
I think Rosberg was the first to gamble, and it may have paid off, but sadly, he just didn't find the pace. When it got drier, the rest of the cars managed to catch them up and sadly overtake them just when it mattered.
And Barrichello had a great lap to get pole position, but he was very light, so clearly just doing it for the fans.
I think he wanted pole at his home race.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a winning strategy. I was kind of thinking that after a chaotic qualifying, things would be calmer in the race.
I kind of figured, actually, that most of this show would be talking about qualifying and the race couldn't match it, because all through this season we've had brilliant Saturdays and dull Sundays.
It was another memorable qualifying, but also that was quite a memorable race.
Do you think it was?
Yeah.
Will you remember that in time to come?
I probably won't, because I have a terrible memory.
Tell me what stood out for you.
There was a lot of action in the first few laps. It was very confusing. Had to watch the replays about 6 times.
Where are you putting the blame on those opening laps? I don't think... Here's a question for the comments, and maybe they can answer, maybe they can't. But have we ever had all the cars safely get through the first 3 corners in Brazil? Because I don't remember that ever happening. There's always somebody causing some grief. And this time it was Mr. Kovalainen having a bit of a spin, causing chaos at the back.
My favourite incident in the early opening laps was actually between Sutil and Trulli, because they had a proper punch-up afterwards. Well, there was no actual punching, but it was awesome. I know. Afterwards, the FIA have fined Trulli $10,000 for having a go at Sutil, which seems a bit harsh.
He was completely and utterly in the wrong. Watching the replays, it looked entirely like it was Trulli's fault, and even when the question was put to him after he'd returned to the paddock, he still maintained that it was Sutil's fault. I have no idea why he flew off the handle like he did. Sutil did move to defend his line, but he only moved once, and Trulli was caught out, and then ended that race very prematurely, and picked up a fine in the process.
Do you know what the other race he missed out on? Is getting to the recovery truck first, because actually while those two were bickering, Alonso ran across and got in there first.
That was brilliant. Alonso somehow managed to get taken out by Sutil. Now, I'm surprised he didn't see Sutil coming across the track at him, and I'm amazed that he couldn't avoid that incident. He was lucky that he wasn't injured, given the speed that Sutil arrived on the scene. But you're right, yeah, Alonso jumped into the front seat. I did ask just a second ago of the comments, was there ever a clean first 3 corners in Brazil, and then we do have a response in the comments. I can't see who it's from, but it's been bumped up by Ollie, and it says, in 1999, there was a safe first lap in Brazil, and Damon Hill was the first retiree on lap 10. There's a fact and a stat for you. Before the Trulli Sutil Alonso incident kicked off, Kovalainen had a spin in turn 2. He clipped Fizzy and flat-spotted his tyres, and although Kimi actually caused and kicked off the Sutil incident by clipping the back of Webber, it all really got messy when the damaged cars returned to the pits, because Kovalainen came in for a new set of tyres after flat-spotting his rubber. Kimi came in for a new wing because he'd obviously clipped the rear of, I think it was Webber he hit the back of. So you had 2 cars fighting for position in the pit lane, McLaren versus Ferrari, just like the old days.
It's always that way.
Touch and go, who was going to be quickest out? Kovalainen was quickest out.
Kovalainen was out first, but he did have half of the fuel hose hanging off because his lollipop person had let him go a little bit early.
Absolutely the fault of the McLaren lollipop guy. Do you know what? If I looking at it again, I think what happened was the lollipop guy saw Kimi's lollipop guy move, and he reacted to that. I think he was looking farther down the pit lane to the next pit box.
Not paying attention to the right thing.
Yeah, he wasn't. I think his eyes were in the wrong. He was having his own little battle. And he lifted the lollipop when Kimi went. And sadly, Kovalainen was taking on more fuel and was nowhere near ready. And then basically threw fuel right the way down the pit lane into the path of Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah, the fuel went right into Kimi's face. Apparently, he's still complaining about burning eyes.
Ow!
So it got into his helmet and everything. And there was a brief... Yes, there was a brief flash fire as well.
Which was spectacular.
It was spectacular. It lasted only a few seconds. There didn't seem to be too much damage. And actually, it was nice because the Braun mechanics came along and helped extinguish it. Almost as if McLaren didn't have enough extinguishers. Or maybe they were just a bit surprised.
The Braun guys also pulled the still-attached fuel hose from Kovalainen's car, which allowed him to continue, which is very good of them, very nice of them. But it was all a bit dramatic, really.
Well, yeah. Afterwards, after the race, McLaren have been fined $50,000. And Kovalainen awarded a drive-through penalty, which converts to a 25-second penalty.
We could probably bitch and moan and complain for hours and hours and hours as to exactly why the stewards couldn't make that decision earlier on in the race. I have no idea why it needed to wait until the end. It was clear as day what had happened without the need of any replays. We was playing, if you followed any of the live comments, maybe the stewards need to follow the live comments because we can
sort out these problems quicker than they can.
And it's unnecessary that it had to wait until the end of the race to be sorted out. And I believe it's only literally just been sorted out now.
That one was actually weirder because the Sutil Trilly things, they said, we'll investigate this after the race.
Which is fine because both cars are out of the race and it makes no odds. Kovalainen was still circulating.
Yeah, and they said they'd investigate it. Then they said they'd investigate it after the race. It was like, well, we've looked at it, but actually we can't make up our minds, so we'll wait. There was a safety car in the first few laps, but it wasn't there for long.
It ruined Rubens' strategy, though.
Well, I think it probably did. It was there
long enough to make sure that he couldn't get away from Webber.
On the restart, though, Button was amazing. He overtook car after car after car.
Do you think he's a deserved champion? Do you think he did enough today to really sell himself to the public?
Yeah, I think he proved his point.
Every overtaking manoeuvre was perfect. He took a little bit of time to get around Kobayashi, and I think that was prudent because he wasn't quite sure. What did he complain
on the radio that Kobayashi was moving around in the braking zone.
He was.
And that came up later as well, when Kobayashi had an incident with Nakajima, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
However, I think Button was just sussing out Kobayashi because he wasn't familiar with his driving style and he was learning with every lap, and eventually he got the job done. I was so impressed, but unbelievably impressed. Firstly, F1 and overtaking.
Doesn't happen, does it?
Let's just have a moment to think about that for a second. Of all the races we watched this season, did we have a season's worth of overtaking in this race? It was incredible.
The Kobayashi thing, he made quite an impressive debut.
Well, qualifying was excellent. He did really well. He just missed out on the top 10. Where did he start? 11th, I believe he started. That was blooming impressive. We've seen a lot worse this year.
Yeah,
mentioning
absolutely.
No names.
He didn't finish in the points, and he was maybe a bit raw, might be the word.
Rough and ready.
Yeah.
But it was racing. It depends how you think Formula One should be. And there are rules that say you shouldn't move around in the braking zones and it should be one move. And fair enough, that's what the rules are. And sometimes it looked like he was bending the rules a little more.
He was very racy, though, and that's what we like to see. And it reminded me of Hamilton. So when he first came in, everyone was like, whoa,
that
guy
just
races around and it could be dangerous. It's the same thing, really.
I mean, his teammate was out, on the first lap? Rough around the edges, but he can smooth those out, and maybe he's done enough for a drive next year.
He could have done. It did seem as though the moving around a little bit in the braking zones might have been a problem because he and Nakajima had a bit of a coming together.
Yes.
Which was an amazing smash.
Nakajima came off worse out of that one.
Yeah, he went into the back of him.
What an almighty collision.
He went
the
sideways into the barrier, then he slid along that barrier, back over the track, into the tyre barrier on the other side.
Yep.
Then I think he came to a stop.
Mm. That's twice in this race we saw a car crossing the track and nearly taking out another car. In Alonso's case, he did take out another car, but Nakajima, thankfully, missed everybody. Gravel trap didn't really do much to slow his chassis down, but Nakajima, thankfully, did get up and walk away from it. Slightly shaken, one would assume, but still in one piece.
In the comments, AD said, I was very impressed with Kobayashi this weekend. Yesterday, as in qualifying, was mental and better drivers than he messed up. Good race pace too, worth another punt, Abu Dhabi maybe, and could get a seat next year.
And I believe it was AD who came up with the comment earlier who I didn't credit correctly. So thank you, AD.
Someone who we haven't mentioned yet is Barrichello. He had a bit of an unlucky day, you might say.
Mr. Pole Sitter himself.
Yes.
And again, never one of his luckiest circuits.
Yeah, so we did say that he was ruined by the safety car.
Which it was and it wasn't, because when the safety car went in, he didn't pull out a huge gap to Mr. Webber. I would have thought he would have stretched his legs and tried to build up as much of a gap as he could before he came into pit early. And it was, what was it, maybe 2 seconds ahead before he came to pit? It was just nothing, no pace in the car, at least compared to Webber.
He actually had quite a lot of Hamilton in his mirrors or in front of him. Hamilton was making his life difficult all day.
He was.
Hassling him for places, and then he gave him a puncture.
Unfortunately, yes, he rubbed off his, Hamilton rubbed off his front wing on Barrichello's rear, and that put bay to any decent result today. However, it was all gone.
Yeah.
The championship was over before that happened, and really, you can't blame Hamilton. And it was good to see them going at it, really. They kept it up for a good number of laps, and it was an enjoyable battle.
And afterwards, I think Barrichello was quite gracious about it, really. He knew it was over.
I think he knew yesterday that if Button had a good result, then it was over, because the qualifying strategy wasn't a sensible one. It was a glory strategy, in the hope that Button would probably, I would imagine they were gambling on Button having an accident in the first lap. And it didn't happen. He fought through the field. So Rubens knew it was over, really.
Hamilton finished on the podium, and he made up an awesome amount of places.
How many?
14 places.
14 places.
Yeah. He started at the back. He ended up on the podium. That was amazing. Vettel also made up 11 places, and Button made up 9.
All good drives from the experienced hands. And you just take your hat off to them, because it was a crazy race and there was plenty of opportunity for things to go wrong, plenty of opportunity for mistakes, and it didn't happen. Apart from literally the front of Hamilton's nose was about the only thing that came to grief all race.
The other two podium finishers were Kubica and Webber.
Where did Kubica come from?
I don't know.
I've got to watch this race back.
Yeah.
What happened? What strategy put him right up there?
It must have been a really good drive, because we didn't see him and then suddenly he was on the podium and he just kept his nose clean the whole way through.
I think he got into second place very early on and thought, well, okay, that's interesting, but he's never going to keep that, surely.
Well, his teammate Heidfeld had, was it gearbox problems?
No, Heidfeld ran out of petrol.
Ah, yes.
The fuel rig went on, no fuel went in, and poor Heidfeld, he couldn't make it back round in order to get any more fuel, and therefore he watched the rest of the race
from the side. Bless him.
And if I recall,
he looked very sad.
That always seems to happen in Brazil. Is it really hard to get back to the paddock or something? I distinctly remember Kovalainen in his first year binning the Renault and spending the rest of the race sitting on the tire wall, just killing time. Essentially, it must be a long way back to that paddock, or very difficult to get to.
But Kubica had none of those problems and did a really good job, as did Webber, who, to be fair, we didn't actually see that much of him.
No,
you know, at the end,
I couldn't tell you. What was the podium? Just remind me one more time what the podium was for this race.
That would be Webber.
Webber followed by?
Kubica.
Followed by?
Hamilton.
Right.
But at the end, you normally watch the race leader.
Did they have a national anthem?
Yes, lap after lap after lap. But this time we were watching Button, which I think was very unfair for poor Webber.
It was the important bit of the race. I mean, the first half of the race was fantastic. It was non-stop. It was go, go, go all the way. And to steal the quote from Jensen, once he got past Kobayashi, it really was, now we're go, go, go.
Let's go.
Which is great. And that's how the first part of the race was. And the second half of the race really wasn't that interesting, but it was very tense because of the title battle, because everything was hanging in the balance. And we were sat there with our calculators going, well, he's got 5 points, 3 points. That's good. That could happen. And, you know, at the end of the race, it was all about Jensen Button. And when he parked his car, that was all that mattered. So I didn't see the podium. I did, because I remember Bob doing his last champagne call of the year. One final champagne for Bob Constanduros, who can't unfortunately do that at the next race because they don't have any champagne.
No, in the comments, RG has said about Kubica and how he managed to get up there. It says he had an awesome start and was fourth from the safety car and moved to third, overtaking Rosberg, and he jumped Barrichello at the pit stop. Now, I do remember that overtake manoeuvre. That was a good one as well.
Lots of overtaking down the field, and like I said, it was a season's worth of passing in one race today.
So Button managed to win the championship then, and Brawn also secured the constructors.
All in one go, and the constructors was almost a dead set. You couldn't see them losing that at this race.
They needed, half a point?
That was just a tick in the box for something that should have happened in Suzuka. However, brilliant. Well done to Brawn from humble beginnings. As a new team, from the ashes of Honda, they picked themselves up and they put themselves to the top step. And they are the number one team in 2009. And they will be in the first garage in 2010.
That Mr. Brawn is really quite a smart fellow.
You wouldn't say, would you? You wouldn't know it from looking at him. Awesome. Really, really fantastic. His first championship that he's ever won without the aid of Michael Schumacher. So that should be noted.
Yep.
Jensen Button will hopefully be with Brawn in the future in order to continue with that partnership. And the thing is, the incredible thing with Brawn is he had two championship contenders in that team today. Vettel wrote himself out on Saturday, and Brawn must have woke up this morning and he said, one of my guys is going to do it today. And that is just immense.
Hey, so podcast, it's Lou. Oh my God, what a race. I'm so pleased for everyone at Brawn, for Jensen. Oh, just amazing. I can't believe it. It finished like almost, a couple of hours ago, and I'm still on top of the moon. I'm just over the, it's just amazing. I can't believe it. It's been such a long trek. 71 laps of absolute Brawnsomeness, and Jensen was amazing and such a drive of a champion. I mean, brilliant. I hope everyone really enjoyed it as well, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
I think Lou might be a little bit in love.
Did you enjoy that?
Blah.
I think, I don't know if I enjoyed the race quite as much as Lou did, because it sounds like she enjoyed it an awful lot. However, thank you for expressing that, Lou, because I didn't think you'd be able to speak for at least a week.
Gavin sent me an email that said, "Hey guys, just want to say, 12 months ago on the side pod panel, I called Jensen rubbish and didn't think he'd ever win a race again. How wrong I was. Well done, Jensen. You really showed that you are a worthy world champion with 6 wins and some great driving this year. He really went out and won it with some proper racing today. And well done to the whole Braun team. The story of them starting from nothing to winning the championship has been an amazing one. They really deserve all the credit they can get, and I hope they can continue to be successful next year. Finally, after my depressing voicemail last time, I was so happy to see some proper racing out there. It was the best race of the year with loads of action and overtaking. It just shows that the old circuits are still the best. I raise my glass and say cheers to Lou, Lukey and all the other Braun fans who stuck with the team and deserve to be as deliriously happy as I was last year for Lewis. See you later, Gavin."
He does raise a good point there. Best race of the year. I think I agree with that one.
A different point of view from RG said, "Hey guys, I don't care about Button because Kubica was awesome today. Really proud for once again the team and once again to show that BMW made a howler in selling the team. Really am gutted the team won't be in F1 next year. Baffled to why we sold them to Cadback, Quad Bike, whatever. Cadback. More baffled to why Bernie and co chose Lotus ahead of them. And yay for Weber, gonna be like the only one praising him today. He was solid and awesome. And yeah, the whole race was awesome. Well, everyone was awesome except for Kobayashi." He's not a Kobayashi fan.
No, well, Kobayashi is standing for Glock, and RG is a Timo fan.
Yes,
and therefore that's to a point that's understandable. And yes, for Weber, I mean, we really haven't given Weber the justice that he deserves. What a great drive from Weber.
"Good evening, Side Podcast gang. It's 80 here from F1 Tailpipe. Oh my God, what a race. What a race. I haven't missed a race myself for about 16 years, but today, just monumentally epic. And, you know, everything that's good about Formula 1 and why you love it so much. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Interested to hear your thoughts on everything as well. And I look forward to checking you out on the debrief. See you later, gang. Bye." I'm not going to sing because I'm even worse than Button.
Monumentally epic.
Everything that is good about Formula 1. That's a line you want to take home with you. Fantasy Racers.
In 5th place, Rhino F1 Team with 12.941, 4th Tilster Racing with 13.005, 3rd Bushy's Bullets with 13.323, 2nd Celtic Racing with 14.734, and 1st Couch Potato with 15.818.
And well done to Danny for getting the Fantasy Races results out so quickly.
I know, super quick. And well done to Stephen Roy for doing his usual collating of stats for us so we don't have to.
Go on.
Much appreciated.
What's he found for us this week?
Sidepod Racers, that's my lovely team. We are in 89th position, having scored 651 points. Longitudinal Inertia is 126 places behind my 4th team.
Let's not talk about that team though.
Really?
There's always next year.
Okay.
I'm concentrating on 2010.
Let's move on to the people's press releases then. Journier says, "A disastrous day for Scuderia Milmelia as it slips outside of the top 100 in the 2009 set and for Scuderia Badoa as it slips to 5th in the 2010 set. Team owner Journier is understandably furious at Sutil and Trulli, who took each other out of the race. Rosberg's reliability woes also hampered both teams. With the 2010 title all but out of the question now, Journier is looking at a serious driver revamp for Abu Dhabi to pick up more data for next year's campaign."
Me too.
That's what you're doing.
Yes.
Seems like a common thing to be doing. Sarah says, "Team Shambolicness is reasonably satisfied with the day's performance. 1st, 4th, and 6th, whilst not the best result, isn't too bad considering Weber has the worst luck. Vettel started from another racetrack and Kimi caught fire. Congratulations go to Jensen for not bottling it. Glad to see Smiler won the title." Gavin says, "Decent day for Rubbergate Racing. Good solid drive for most of the drivers, even Kubica. Fisichella scored points as a super sub for Glock, who is recovering at home with a cracked vertebrae. 44th in the points, so all is good. Congrats to Jensen and Braun." RG says, "Chucking the rulebook out. Thank God Finland exists." I like his super short press releases. Lou says, "What an amazing race. Totally incredible. All of our drivers performed to their best today with a stunning drive from Jensen. Fernando and Kimi were unfortunately caught up in other incidents that hindered their results. But all in all, a great weekend to be proud of over at Honda's Helping Hand." And finally, James says, badly named team must be worse than Mr. C. Would like to extend sincere congratulations to Mr. Button and Mr. Braun. Although we are not now in a position to challenge them any longer, we would like to say they have been worthy adversaries despite rather unsportingly racing at all the venues this year. Team MBWTMC must be worse than Mr. C. I love that team name.
I don't.
Disappointingly forgot that Glock would have been a sure bet for solid lack of points, and in a slight oversight kept Not Seb in for a drive. We are, however, extremely pleased to report that the rest of the team, Shumi, Badoa, Massa, PK and Bourdais, all proved even more consistent than the great Mr. Button himself. Quite a first season, if we say so ourselves. Can I have my £5 now, Mr. C?
No. Feedback.
My first email this week comes from Peter. He says, Christine, Mr. C, you asked to hear from people who have been following F1 for a long time, and I think I qualify for that, having followed it since 1968, when I was 8 years old. That is quite a long time. I remember my friends at school used to have heroes such as George Best, Jim Clark and the Kinks, and being upset when Clark was killed. That year, they had a programme on TV after Blue Peter called Tom Tom, where they ran a simulation of each Grand Prix using Scalextric's cars.
What?
And there was a free cardboard promotional device for recording the results. I sent off for that and have been hooked ever since.
What?
That sounds better than the stupid CBBC commentary.
That sounds fantastic. Okay.
The big difference between then and now is the coverage. Back then, there was only black and white TVs, of course, and you only had coverage of three or four races a year, the British, Monaco and the Italian races, and maybe the Dutch or German races through Eurovision. For coverage, it was 5 minutes at the start and 5 minutes here and there between horse racing or cricket, so you would hover close to the TV for most of an afternoon.
Sounds like Five Live these days.
Some of these races were on a Saturday in those days, as were all football matches. Some years there was no coverage, and in the mid-70s, the BBC banned coverage for a while, as one team, Surtees, was sponsored by Durex, the condom manufacturer, which was deemed inappropriate. Normally, you would wait for the sports report at 5pm or 7pm to hear the name of the winner, or if you were lucky, the 1-2-3. If you missed that, you would wait for the newspaper the next day. I used to dream that maybe one day they would show races in cinemas in London. I think they had done this with boxing, and you could watch it live. As a teenager, I used to look forward to a Thursday when Autosport or Motoring News came out to hear all the gossip and read the race reports. In the late 70s, early 80s came highlights in the evening, and soon after that it developed into live coverage of races, and by the mid-80s they sometimes had qualifying of the British race. I used to be able to timeline my life by the Grand Prix. I remember the 1987 British Grand Prix, the one where Nigel Mansell fought back against Nelson Piquet Sr., being given my wailing six-month-old son at the start. He was asleep before half distance, but woken a few laps before the end when Mansell took the lead and I yelled out. Or being in Antigua in 1996, dragging out the hiring of a car for a family day out whilst watching Hill versus Schumacher versus Villeneuve at Spa. So podcast is one of the greatest shows in all of that time, especially in the winter when you haven't had an F1 fix for a while. Keep up the good work, Peter, aka the Adelaide one.
Thank you, Peter. That is a trip down memory lane that. And beyond. That goes far, far, far further back than anything I could ever remember. When I started watching Formula One, it was just on the telly. It just always was, every race covered fully.
It's just always been like this.
Just is what it is. It had a bit of a dip. Yeah, it had a bit of a dip when ITV took over the coverage. And some might say it hasn't got better since. However, we are still spoilt compared to Peter had when he got into it.
A shorter email I had this week was from Lawrence. He says, "Hello, Christina from the US. All of your shows that you've put together makes F1 more enjoyable, something which is very needed, especially this year. I was listening to the Forgotten Team podcast and I wanted to let you and your team know you guys are doing a bang-up job.
Hi.
However, hi. You're my team.
I am the team.
We are the team. However, you guys used to make videos and I was wondering why not anymore. I think that your mini-series could do for some video, even if it was just old photos from the past that related to the team you were talking about. Anyway, great show. I love it. Keep up the good work. Kind regards, Lawrence McHugh."
That's a great idea. It's a lot of work. There's a couple of reasons, actually, why we haven't done video this year. And I'm not sure if we talked about it. Maybe only in the comments. Maybe not on the shows. But for one, there was a credit crunch. And Formula One teams made a lot of cutbacks. Most notably, Formula Unas were removed this season, which was a big shame. But also, Red Bull and other teams have done less promotional video footage. And as we are not allowed to use any race footage, thanks to Mr. Eccleston, that's what we rely on. Therefore, we'd have to do an awful lot, put in an awful lot more effort in order to make a video without any footage at all. There is some about, but it's not particularly good. I mean, it's in some cases, it's downright awful, actually, compared to what we've had in previous years. So that's the primary reason. Secondary reason is we've been putting more effort into things like development on the site.
And live streaming as well.
Live streaming and all sorts of other stuff has taken precedent. But it doesn't mean it's gone forever. It could easily come back, and we'll have to see what next year has in store.
We are starting to think about video again, aren't we? So it's still in our brains.
The thing is, it's things like this are always moving forward. Technology is always moving forward, and we're always keeping our eye on it. We have, during the off-season, some improvements to make to the live streaming video thingy. Because it's not as good as we want it to be. So that's the first thing to solve. And then after that, we'll see where we are with video and we can see whether or not we can do more on that front. But no, it's a good idea. And miniseries in video sounds like something we should probably look into and hadn't considered before.
A couple more emails then. This one is from Mike and the subject line was, "Thanks for a great introductory season." It says, "Christine and Mr. C." Like it says in the subject line, thanks.
All the team.
Thanks for, yeah.
Christine my and team. The team.
Thanks for making my first season of Formula One much more enjoyable. I've loved the show and the website since I found them back before the Australian GP. I just missed getting into live commenting for the first time this morning. I was half an hour behind the live broadcast on my TiVo. And like Paul Rubens today, I just couldn't close the gap. Looking forward to having another go next season when the races are closer to my time zone. I'm one of the 9 California fans by the listener map. I've also had a good time following fantasy races. And as of this afternoon's race in Brazil, I'm at a respectable 145th place in the Sidepodcast League. I might take a moment here to point you and Mr. C at Grand Prix Racing Online, though perhaps you already know about it. Yep. It's been the other outstanding adjunct to my first F1 season. GPRO combines my love of strategy games and F1. Might be fun to find out if any other SPC listeners play.
Please
anyway,
do tell us. It's complete news to me.
I've never heard of it. Thanks again for producing a truly top-notch podcast and helping me really get into Formula One racing. I'm looking forward to next season already. Mike.
Mike, it's been a pleasure.
Before we get to my last email, I did just want to give a quick shout out to Steve. I think we read out his email maybe last show or a couple of shows ago. He was going to send me a poster that he got signed by Frank.
I recall that.
Do you remember?
I do.
It arrived.
How does it look? Did it arrive in one piece?
It's a little bit crushed at one end, but nothing major to speak of. And it's
awesome.
It'll
iron out.
Yes,
it'll
absolutely.
It'll be fine. And is it signed by Frank?
It's signed by Frank. It says, "Big kisses." My last email then, although we do have a voicemail to play as well, this is from Dom. It says, "Hi Side Podcast, it's Dom, the same one who used to comment lots and then disappeared."
Dom!
Not out of choice, it's
Dom!
Been quite a busy year.
Oh, I miss Dom. F1 Files Dom.
Yeah.
And Honda, I nearly said Honda, Braun fan.
Just thought I'd quickly mention how amazing today has been as a long-term Jensen fan, although I know I don't need to because there are a few of them in the comments already. Big respect to everyone else who stuck with Jensen and Honda through the years. Today has made it all completely worth it. At times, it felt like so few people believed he had the talent to reach the top in F1, and Honda pulling out last year was thoroughly depressing. I had accepted that 2008 would be another difficult year and convinced myself Jensen would be fighting near the front in 2009 and maybe competing for the title, but I'm not sure if I ever genuinely thought it would happen. After Honda left, I tried to stay positive in the belief that the team could be saved, but I really was doubting Jensen would ever get the chance to prove himself in F1. Everything since that test in Barcelona has been a bit unreal, and I'm struggling to believe anything in this entire season has actually happened. After all we've seen this year, I don't think anything else that happens in F1 can surprise us now. Hope everyone at Side Podcast is well. We'll try to rejoin the fun when I have a bit more time."
Good man. I'm all the better from hearing from Dom, because I was a bit worried his blog went a little bit quiet. So thank you for getting in touch. And I did think of Dom earlier today, actually, when we were talking about, I think it was Gavin's email came in and he was talking about Lou and Lukey and everybody sticking by Braun. It was Dom who was amongst that group during the winter who, whilst we were writing them off and bemoaning the fact that they were quitting Formula One, these guys stuck by the Braun team, the Braun drivers. They had faith, and today that faith was rewarded.
Hello, Side Podcast. Yes, I've decided to leave a voicemail this week about the Yas Marina circuit. We haven't seen a lot about it recently. Well, we haven't until recently, as it's not even finished. But now it's finished. They've had the British media, the world's media, stopping over there in Abu Dhabi on their way back from Suzuka. And we've seen photos, we've seen videos. James Allen posted a video on his blog of Martin Brundle going around the two-seater, Martin Bruno Senna, in fact. But still, yeah, they had a big event there. And there's sort of been mixed reviews in the comments. Some people like it. Some people think it's completely rubbish. I'm of the opinion I actually love it, which is new way biased by the fact that I grew up there. It's quite different to sort of the normal Tilkadrome sort of arenas we see, which are built way out of town with nothing around them, middle of the desert, sort of the Bahrains, the Turkeys, where nobody bothers to go. Yas is slightly different. It's sort of built on a newly developing island, and there's going to be stuff built around it, so it'll sort of be an inner-city racetrack, which will be quite interesting. It's got a bit of sort of the Hockenheim Stadium feel about it, especially in the North Hairpin, which is a really enclosed area, and cars go in around about three corners and out the other end of it, which should be quite entertaining. The stands are right on top of the track as well, so it should get a really good intimate atmosphere. Also some sort of the attributes of Indianapolis, with sort of really fast, long, two long straights, and then sort of a Mickey Mouse sort of section coming back, which would be quite nice because it's along the waterfront, so I'll be going around the edges of harbours. And there's obviously the pit lane tunnel, which is a recipe for carnage, possibly made worse by the fact that the race is at sunset. But yeah, I'm expecting someone to hit that tunnel wall in one of the three practice sessions. Then what they do after that, I've no idea. They'll clearly be blocked and it could be crazy. So I know Mr. C isn't that impressed yet, but I'm hoping 2 weeks' time it'll all blow you away. I'd love to give you a review of the circuit, but unfortunately it's completely sold out, largely due to the fact they've got these music concerts on now, which I didn't know about, and no one to buy my ticket. There was no chance to buy any. So if anyone out there can get me a ticket or would like me to review their race, if you work for Yas Marina, I'll be more than happy to do so, because I'll be in the UAE at the time, but I can't get a ticket, unfortunately. Anyway, keep up the good work, guys,
Nick.
And thanks a lot.
Fancy being so close, so near yet so far,
yeah,
all that way. And you can just hear the cars, but not go near them. That must be quite frustrating.
They should do what they do for Wimbledon and put up big screens pointing outwards, yes, so people can sit on hills and just watch it anyway.
It's a sellout event. Why not? Why not do that?
Yeah.
You've got nothing to lose. Nick's right. I'm not impressed with what I've seen thus far. And
the big worry seems to be the pit lane tunnel thing.
Yeah.
May not be as safe as you would hope.
It's full speed. So you're off the pit lane limiter. It's narrow. It's a tunnel. Obviously, that's going to be the difference. The same problem you get in Monaco when you go from light to shade. If an accident occurs in the tunnel, getting things in there to remove the cars might be tricky, might be difficult. And still, there are question marks over what happens to the safety car if it can't get out because it's trapped within the pit lane. So that's not great. In the past, we've had changes to pit lane entrances that people have said, oh, it's going to be a disaster. Spa, a couple of years ago, springs to mind, and you know, there were claims of there were going to be a huge pile up there, and we've yet to see any problems, and you know, these races continue and people deal with it when it happens. So I doubt that'll be a big issue. My main beef with the circuit is it looks really, really boring in the fact that it has a very long straight and then a really slow middle section, and I don't think it's going to give you the drama that we've experienced in Brazil. And also, what are we actually going there for anyway? Because what you've got is a lot of pretty buildings and some bright lights, but both championships are over. It feels to me
it's like very unfortunate for them.
It is. It feels today. Does it not feel like the season's done?
It does.
Can we go home now?
I mean,
we're Dimob happy. Let's call it a day.
It was, I think it was Ollie who was saying that in 2007, really great championship finish at Brazil.
Yep.
2008, amazing championship finish at Brazil.
Yes.
2009, really good championship finish at Brazil, plus another race.
Yeah. What are you doing in 2 weeks' time? I don't know. I'm going to be watching a light show, I think. You know, there's a lot of good things about Abu Dhabi. It's running in the evening. The race is going to get dark around the cars. It's floodlit. The pictures we've seen look stunning. The track doesn't look as exciting. On the plus side, everybody's just going to go hell for leather because, you know, you're just in
it for
the glory.
They've got nothing to lose now.
There's a couple of battles going on down the order. But, you know, the main things are done and dusted. Mostly now it's just about money. And everybody else is going to be in it to win it, I suppose, because you want to be the first winner of the first Grand Prix at Abu Dhabi. So I'm sort of in two minds. We'll see what's to come. It's a shame that the championship for them. It's a shame for the organisers that the championship isn't going down to the wire. However, Brazil, it just felt right. It felt like that was the place for it to happen. It was good to see the same scenes we witnessed this time last year, and I think it's drawn a nice line under 2009, and then we've just got this extra race to deal with.
Housekeeping. Only one thing to note this week. We finally donated our money to the Wings for Life charity for SciPod Radio.
How much did we donate?
It was £680.
What a whopping figure.
Yeah, lots of money. Red Bull wrote a little note about it on their website in the news section.
Much appreciated.
And we also had an email from the Wings for Life managing director, Anita. She said, thank you so much for featuring our foundation in your show, especially like the muffin cooking part.
No! Enough of the muffins.
And passing on the donations to Wings for Life. We very much appreciate your support, and we can guarantee that 100% of the donations will be used to finance research projects, as all administrative costs of Wings for Life are covered by our founders.
That's good to know.
So thank you to everyone.
Thank you to everybody who chose that foundation.
Yep.
To everybody who contributed, who listened to SciPod Radio, who made an effort and you know, took part in, yeah, and was on SciPod
Radio. We've done the thank yous before.
I love thank yous, and I really mean it.
What I'm concerned about is that on Twitter you said we'll do another one soon.
Oh, yes. More charity stuff. I love it. Can't get enough of it. More 12-hour radio shows, more donations, more charity stuff.
Are we doing a show next week?
I have absolutely no idea what we're doing next week. I can barely get through this week.
I think we probably are. Can you guess what it might be about? The FIA elections are on Friday.
Okay.
So we'll have a couple of days to come to terms with whoever gets voted in.
Before we do another show.
Yeah.
Good luck. Well, maybe by then people will just be bored of listening.
Yeah, I think maybe the show won't be all about politics.
Because the racing, I think if we learn anything today, it's that the racing is important. It's the most important thing. It's the reason why we all watch. It's the reason why we sat through 3 hours of qualifying to get to the race that we got to on Sunday, and my Lord, weren't we rewarded.